And since yesterday, before we started with first recitation of Heart Sutra in Pali, then also in Sanskrit. And those who follow the tradition of Sanskrit from different countries have also do the recitation of Heart Sutra in their own languages. So these are all completed. And as Lama Tsongkhapa says, that wherever the teachings, the jewel teachings, have not reached, and so in whole, the almost many part of the Asia, almost the whole part of the Asia, the Buddhism has reached. And those places where the teachings of the Lord Buddha has never reached in the past, for example, the Western countries and the Arab nations. So these places, Buddha's teachings have never reached before. And in the 21st century and in the 20th century, so gradually, and when we have more relation with the Asian countries, and especially when the tourists come to the different part of Asian countries from the Western countries, and gradually they have developed interest to the traditions, the religious traditions of Asia. In America, I think it was in Los Angeles or San Francisco, there is a Sikh temple, Sikh Gurudwara, and there's also a priest, a Sikh priest. And with him, there are also some American Westerners who also in the same attire of the Sikh, with the turbans and so on. And so all of these Indian traditions gradually coming over to the Western countries, and especially in Buddhism, and that too the Nalanda tradition, which is based and grounded on the reason. Explanations are all based on the reasoning. And this tradition actually grounded more on the reason, but not merely on the scriptural quotations. So the Western, many from the Western countries, even from the scientists, are gradually gaining more interest to the teachings of the Buddha, especially pertaining to the philosophical standpoints. So therefore, in the past, the many places and the countries where the Buddhism has never spread, but a new interest has been gaining. And today here, I have many, some of them here who are my friends, and they have arranged for the recitation of Heart Sutra in English. So historically, so they are the youngest or the newest disciples of Lord Buddha. So they will recite the Heart Sutra recitation in English.
Thank you.
So today is the concluding session, and for the concluding of these teachings for this time in Bodh Gaya, so I'm going to give the permission of Saraswati. Mandala offering will be done later. So we will go through the Dhammakatha Sutra. So reading from the text. So Buddha, what do you think about this? Is one view test the Tathagata due to the perfect marks? So Buddha replied, Bhagavan, it is not so. One is not viewed as the Tathagata due to the perfect marks. Why is that? Because that itself which the Tathagata called perfect marks or not perfect marks. So Buddha, those who will acquire merely a single mind of faith upon the words of such sutras, as being explained. Is page number 7. So Buddha, the Tathagata knows. They are seen by the Tathagata, so Buddha, all those sentient beings will produce and perfectly collect an unfathomable heap of merit. So the philosophy of no self, And also when it comes to the explanation of no self, so different scholars within the different masters within the Buddhist philosophical tenets have their own explanations. And ultimately it is Nagarjuna who in the salutation verses of the fundamental wisdom spoke about the emptiness which is free from eight contradictions, and explain the emptiness as being merely designated. And when we speak about merely, it actually signifies that there is not even a single objective existence from the objective side. And when we come to realize that, it will be able to destroy the consideration, the grasping within us. And the other lower schools, when we speak about finding the self, since they are not able to establish the self of a person as merely designated, so Bhava Viveka, so in his text, he says that the consciousness is the point of reference for the self. And this actually shows that they are not able to pinpoint the self as merely designated. And also when they refer to the different reasonings, and in order to establish the emptiness, so they depend on the reasons, which are also called independent reasons. And here the independent has connotation about some existence of subjective from their own objective side. And when it comes to the Nagarjuna's teachings on the foundations and the path and so on, and all parts of those teachings usually combine with the expressions saying that they are merely designated and merely imputed and so on. And this is the main antidote, the counter measures that will defeat the true graspings within us. And the grasping of the true existence of the phenomena is the source of all the sufferings. And so therefore, such kind of the understanding, wisdom, understanding emptiness is the one that will be able to destroy all those ignorance. And so meditating or generation of that too should not be focused on not only for the benefit of one's own, but for all the sentient beings. So if we are able to do in this way, then we will be able to gather a huge merits. Subhuti, those bodhisattva, mahasattvas will not engage in discriminating phenomena, non-discriminating non-phenomena. It is not so. One is not viewed as the Tathagata due to the perfect marks. Why is that? Because that itself which the Tathagata call perfect marks are not perfect marks. He replied thus, and His Holiness comments that due to the presence of the number of the objects in front of us, and they're all by nature, their own dependent originated. Continues reading, to the degree there are no perfect marks, to that degree there is no deception. And when we speak about deception here, it is speaking about the difference in appearance and reality. When we understand the emptiness, the object that we comprehend is also comes to the point that it is free of the eight fabrications. And that understanding, when it further, when we progress that mind, then we will be able to clear the dualism, the considering of the dual appearance of the object. Thus, view the Tathagata as marks and no marks. continue reading. He said that, and the Venerable Subodhi replied to the Bhagavan, Bhagavan, in the future period, at the end of the 500, when the holy Dharma will totally perish, will any sentient beings produce correct discrimination upon the words of sutra, such as this being explained? The Bhagavan said, Subodhi, do not say what you have said. In the future period, at the end of the 500, when the holy Dharma will totally perish, will any sentient beings produce correct discrimination upon the words of sutras, such as this being explained? Moreover, Subodhi, in the future period, at the end of the 500, when the holy Dharma will totally perish, there will be bodhisattva mahasattvas, endowed with morality, endowed with qualities, endowed with wisdom. So with those bodhisattva mahasattvas, moreover, will not have made homage to just a single Buddha. They will not have produced roots of virtue to just a single Buddha. Subodhi, those who will acquire merely a single mind of faith upon the words of such sutras as this being explained, Subodhi, the Tathagata knows. Subodhi, they are seen by the Tathagata, all those sentient beings will produce and perfectly collect an unfathomable heap of merit. Why is that? Subodhi, because those bodhisattva mahasattvas will not engage in discriminating herself and will not discriminate a sentient being, will not discriminate a living being, will not engage in discriminating a person. Subodhi, those bodhisattva mahasattvas will not engage in discriminating phenomena, nor discriminating non-phenomena, nor will they engage in discrimination or non-discrimination. Why is that further, Subodhi? Because bodhisattva should not wrongly grasp phenomena, nor grasp non-phenomena. Therefore, thinking of that, the Tathagata said, if by those who know this Dharma treatise as like a boat, even Dharmas should be given up, what need is there to mention non-Dharmas? Further, the Bhagavan said to the Venerable Subodhi, Subodhi, what do you think about this? Does that Dharma that was manifestly and completely realized by the Tathagata, unsurpassed, perfect, and complete enlightenment, exist whatsoever? Has any Dharma been taught by the Tathagata? Page number 8. He said that, and the Venerable Subodhi replied to the Bhagavan, Bhagavan, as I understand this meaning that was taught by the Bhagavan, that Dharma that was manifestly and completely realized by the Tathagata, unsurpassed, perfect, and complete enlightenment, does not exist whatsoever. That Dharma that was taught by the Tathagata does not exist whatsoever. The Bhagavan said to the Venerable Subodhi, Subodhi, what do you think about this? If some son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage completely filling this billionfold system with the seven types of precious things, where to give gifts, do you think that son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage will produce an immense heap of merit on that basis? Subodhi replied, Bhagavan, immense, Sugata, immense, that son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage would produce an immense heap of merit on that basis. Why is it that? Bhagavan, because that very heap of merit is not a heap. Therefore, the Tathagata says, heap of merit, heap of merit. Reading from page number 9. Why is that, Subuddhi? Because the usurpers perfectly completed enlightenment of the Tathagata Arahat, perfectly completed Buddhas arises from it. The Buddha Bhagavans also are produced from it. Why is it that? Subuddhi, because the Buddha Dharmas called Buddha Dharmas are those teachings taught by the Tathagata as non-existent. Therefore, they are called Buddha Dharmas. So the understanding of the wisdom realizing emptiness has to come through the three process of the wisdom, by listening, contemplation, and meditative. And through that process, when one is able to eliminate all the afflictions, one becomes Arahat. Page number 10, the Bhagavan said, Subuddhi, what do you think about this? Does the Arahat think I have attained the result of Arahatship? Subuddhi replied, Bhagavan, it is not so. Why is that? Because the phenomenon called Arahat does not exist whatsoever. Bhagavan, if the Arahat were to think I have attained the result of Arahatship, that itself will be a grasping of that as a self, grasping as a sentient being, grasping as a living being, as a person. And now this is with respect to the four the results and the four enterers, the stream enterer, the ones returner, and the does not returner, and the one who is in the path of the normal learning. Continue reading from page number 10. Bhagavan, I was declared by the Tathagata perfectly completed as the foremost of those who abide without afflictions. Bhagavan, I am an Arahat, free of attachment. But Bhagavan, I do not think I am an Arahat. If I were to think I have attained Arahatship, the Tathagata would not make the prediction about me, saying the son of the lineage is the foremost of those who abide without afflictions. Since not abiding in anything whatsoever, he abides without affliction. He abides without affliction. The Bhagavan said, Subuddhi, what do you think about this? Does that Dharma that was received by the Tathagata from the Arahat perfectly completed Buddha, Dibankara, exist whatsoever? Subuddhi replied, Bhagavan, it is not so. That Dharma that was received by the Tathagata from the Tathagata Arahat perfectly completed Buddha, Dibankara, does not exist whatsoever. The Bhagavan said, Subuddhi, if some bodhisattva were to say, I shall actualize arranged fields, they will speak unruly, untruly. Why is that, Subuddhi? Because arranged fields, called arranged fields, those arrangements were taught by the Tathagata as non-existent. Therefore, they are called arranged fields. Subuddhi, therefore, the bodhisattva thus should generate the mind without abiding, should generate the mind not abiding in anything. They should generate the mind not abiding in form, should generate the mind not abiding in sound, smell, taste, tactility, or phenomenon. Continue reading from page number 11. Subuddhi, it is like this. If, for example, the body of a being were to become thus, were to become like this, as big as Sumeru, the king of mountains. Subuddhi, what do you think about this? Would that body be big? He replied, Bhagavan, that body will be big. Sugata, that body will be big. Why is that? Because it is taught by the Tathagata as not being a thing. Therefore, it is called a body. Since it is taught by the Tathagata as not being a thing, therefore it is called a big body. The Bhagavan said, Subuddhi, what do you think about this? If there were also just as many Ganges rivers as there are grains of the sand in the river Ganges, would their grains of sand be many? Subuddhi replied, Bhagavan, if those very Ganges rivers were many, there is no need to mention their grains of sand. Subhadra replied, Bhagavan, if those very Ganges rivers were many, there is no need to mention the grains of sand. The Bhagavan said, Subhadra, you should appreciate, you should understand. If some man or woman completely filling with the seven kinds of precious things, that manifold systems as the grains of the sand of those river Ganges, were to offer that to the Tathagata Arahat, perfectly completed Buddhas, Subhadra, what do you think about this? Would that man or woman produce much merit on that basis? He replied, Bhagavan, much, Sugata, much. That man or woman will produce much merit on that basis. The Bhagavan said, Subhadra, compared to someone who completely filling that many world systems with the seven types of precious things, way to give gifts to the Tathagata Arahat, perfectly completed Buddhas. If someone having taken even as little as a stanza of four lines from this discourse of Dharma, way to explain it and correctly and thoroughly teach it also to others, on that basis, the merit that itself will produce would be much greater, incalculable and fathomable. Furthermore, Subhadra, if at whatever place on earth even a stanza of four lines from this discourse on Dharma is recited or taught, of the world with devas, humans and asuras, one need to mention that whatever comes with this discourse of Dharma, memorized, reads, understand and properly takes to mind, will be more astonishing. At this place on Vent, the teacher recites, one levels of gurus also abide. He said that and Venerable Subhadra replied to the Bhagavan, Bhagavan, what is the name of this discourse of Dharma? How should it be remembered? He said that and the Bhagavan replied to the Venerable Subhadra, the name of this Dharma discourse is the wisdom gone beyond. The name of this Dharma discourse is the wisdom gone beyond. It should be remembered like that. Why is that? Subhadra, because the very same wisdom gone beyond that is taught by the Tathagata is not gone beyond. Therefore, it is called wisdom gone beyond. So earlier His Holiness comment that pertaining to this line, that whatever place on the earth, even a stanza of four lines from this discourse on Dharma is recited or taught, that place on earth is a real shrine of the world with devas. So this is also pertaining similar to one of the qualifications of the Arahats the Bodhisattvas in the meditative path, that wherever that kind of that level of Bodhisattva resides, all the places will become a real shrine. So continuously reading the last para of page number 12, Subhadra replied, Bhagavan, the particles of earth are many. Sugata, they are many. Why is that? Bhagavan, because that which is a particle of earth was taught by the Tathagatas as not being a particle. Therefore, it is called particle of earth. That which is a world system was taught by the Tathagata as not being a world system. Therefore, it is called a world system. The Bhagavan said, Subhadra, what do you think about this? Is one to be viewed as the Tathagata Arahat, perfectly completed Buddha, due to those 32 marks of a great being? Subhadra replied, Bhagavan, it is not so. Why is that? Bhagavan, because those 32 marks of a great being that are taught by Tathagata are taught by Tathagatas as no marks. Therefore, they are called 32 marks of the Tathagata. The Bhagavan said further, Subhadra, compare with some man or woman completely giving up bodies, numbering the grains of the sand of the river Ganges. If someone taken even as little as a stanza of four lines from this discourse of Dharma, also way to teach it to others, they will produce on that basis many greater merits, incalculable, unfathomable. Page number 14. For the Subuddhi, that itself, which is the patience gone beyond of the Tathagata, has not gone beyond. Why is that? Subuddhi, because when the king of Kaliyuga cut off my limbs and appendix, at that time there did not arise and made discrimination as a self, discrimination as a sentient being, discrimination as a living being, or discrimination as a person. And in me there was no discrimination whatsoever. Yet there was also no non-discrimination. Why is that? Subuddhi, because if at that time there had arisen in me discrimination as a self, at that time there would also have arisen discrimination of malice. And if there had arisen discrimination as a sentient being, as a living being, as a person, at that time there would also have arisen discrimination of malice. So from here onwards, so these are the benefits pertaining to listening to the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra and studying it. And when it comes to the last, the periods of the Lord Buddha's teaching at this degenerated time, even at this time, if one is able to, of course, there will be many who will study, listen, and practice the perfection of wisdom. So it is quoted in the sutra. So we are among them. At this degenerated time that we are listening to the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, and we are also studying this text. I think this also affect the one who conquered the three worlds. So the one which actually create the suffering world of the three realms is actually the grasping of the truly established, the grasping the things as truly existent. So therefore, this grasping is the king of king, the one similar to the one who creates all this world. And we are all always take it for granted that this is a part of our life. And as soon as we gain some understanding that this grasping is a distorted thought, that it's a wrong view, and based on reasoning, experimenting from the pertaining to from the its causal side, from the resultant side, from the both, with all these reasonings, then when we subject them to critical analysis, if we speak in plain language, then that grasping will not find any basis to hold. And at that time, the grasping itself will be frightened that it doesn't, cannot be find any thing to hold on to it. And something that we cannot be patient, that we can tremble. The grasping will be under the fear of trembling.
About the marks of the Buddhas and so forth, and there were terms used like deception and suchness or truth, which refer to emptiness as being and dependent origination. So when the Kalinga, king of Kalinga, cut off my limbs, on page 14, my limbs and appendages, at that time there did not arise in me discrimination or perception as a self, discrimination as a sentient being, or perception as a living being, and perception as a person. And in me there was no perception whatsoever, yet there was also no perception. Why is that, Subuddhi? Because if at that time there had arisen in me this perception as a self, of at that time there would be also, and they would also have a resistant perception of malice and so forth. And so this points to the fact that the afflictive mental afflictions arise because of our inappropriate mentation, which is like fantasizing about things. And so and this is actually true even from the scientific point of view. One American psychiatrist whom I knew when I was when I first met him, he was in his 80s, and because of his what he had said at that first meeting, saying that things are all mental projection. So what I was actually inspired or attracted, impressed by his explanation was that because he was someone who counseled the people with psychiatric problems for decades. And from his experience, he found that the people, when they become angry at someone or somebody, they see the object of that anger as totally negative, whereas in the case of this negativity, 90% of it is our own mental projection, their own mental projection. And so the three poisons, Master Nagarjuna says, arises through this conceptual thought, which is the... And so this shows the scriptural quotation or source, and seeing things as beautiful or unattractive. So we become attached or angry, or develop aversion or attachment. So we do. It's not enough to say that understanding of emptiness fights or counters that of our negative emotions or the grasping at true existence. What we have to understand is that this inappropriate mentation gives rise to the mental afflictions, and this itself, this inappropriate mentation itself, is rooted in this grasping at true existence, which conceives things and beings to have some kind of a standalone, independent existence. And when you are able to confirm that there is no way things and beings could exist that way, you first, of course, develop understanding through hearing the teachings or studying, and then this has not much power to counter this grasping, but by reflecting over and over again, you develop this conviction, understanding based on that is drawn on reflection. And so when this is developed, then when you have the inferential valid cognition, so with regard to the selflessness, when you develop this conviction through reflection, you have developed this valid cognition, inferential valid cognition of emptiness. And so in this way, you develop the deeper insight into that of the selflessness. And so in through this, one understands that the mental afflictions arise from the exaggerated outlook, and this in turn, the fabrication arises through this grasping at self. Any true existence, through steady reflection and then meditation, you will shake the root of this grasping. So this American psychiatrist, when he said that, I also had this idea, if the quantum physicists who say that things have no objective existence could have less amount of or intensity of the mental afflictions, because the mental afflictions arise through the exaggerated outlook, and that in turn is rooted in the grasping or clinging to what appears to the how things appear to, which is the independent existence. So I thought that these quantum physicists may have less exaggerated outlook on things because they see that things have no objective existence. Not only doing any kind of gaining the understanding through on an intellectual level. So I had this qualm in my mind whether this could be true, and I have told people to actually do some research on this. And last year I found a Chinese quantum physicist from mainland China who has said that when the quantum physicists find that things have no total objective existence and they really feel convinced in it in their heart of hearts, they do not see things totally in black and white. And so this actually proves that the quantum physicists could have this exaggerated outlook on things, whether they're beautiful or ugly or whatever. And His Holiness was pointing to the Chinese interpreter, Jamian Renchen, saying that you brought me this information from the Chinese physicist. Information that you found, which was said by the Chinese mainland Chinese physicist. Through inferential valid cognition, and then deepen that understanding, you will be able to fight the grasping itself, grasping. And so this year, sometime at the end of this year, I will have a meeting with quantum physicists from Taiwan, and also perhaps quantum physicists from mainland China could join this meeting, and there may be some Indian quantum physicists as well. So I'm thinking of holding a meeting with quantum physicists sometime this year. So because of this exaggerated outlook, due to our inappropriate mentation, we become attached or angry and so forth. It's very clear, although we do not become aware of this. For example, when you see something really beautiful, and then someone really beautiful, and then you marry that person, and after a while, you fight and quarrel and fight with that person, and then you divorce. And similarly, in the case of becoming angry at somebody, and then you do all kinds of things out of anger. But when you really see the reality of that person, of course, that person whom you are angry at cannot be totally negative right from birth. When the anger subsides, then you see, oh, the person is not that bad. Someone who may be your enemy could, after several years, become your friend. And so, because of attachment and anger, what you see is the person is totally attractive, beautiful, or totally ugly. So that ugliness or beauty is not there in the object as you projected. So this can be seen from your own experience. So when you become attached or angry at something or somebody, you only focus on that aspect of the person, seeing that person as totally positive or negative. Whereas that quality or aspect is only one aspect of the person, whether it beauty, whether the person is beautiful that you see as through attachment or something ugly that you see with your anger. And so when you look from another angle and another angle, then you see another aspect of the person as well. And so what mental afflictions do is targets on a specific aspect of the person and things. And then you become attached or angry and so forth. And so this shows how mental afflictions arise through our exaggerated outlook on things. Whereas the positive states of mind, such as compassion and so forth, do not are not rooted in this the mental inappropriate mentation. And so this is what is being taught here. Subhuti, because if at that time there had arisen in me the discrimination or perception as a self, at that time there would also have arisen discrimination or perception of malice. If there had arisen this discrimination as a sentient being, discrimination as a living being, discrimination or perception as a person, at that time there would also have arisen discrimination of malice. Subhuti, I know with clairvoyance that in the past period, during 500 lifetimes, I was a rishi called preacher of patience and so forth, grasping a true existence in things, which must be countered through this insight into emptiness that is developed through study, reflection, and then also the deeper experience through meditation. And the 400 verses says that just as the physical faculty permeates or pervades all the faculties, in the commentary to it by Master Chandrakirti on this verse, he says that all negative mental afflictions are based on this ignorance. And then he also says that they go together with the ignorance as well. And so based on the ignorance, the negative emotions that are the mental afflictions that arise are the gross ones, whereas the subtle ones go together with it. And so he comments on this verse, which says that of the 400 verses, that all just as the physical faculty permeates all other sensory faculties, likewise ignorance permeates all mental afflictions. And so he says, Master Arya Deva says that this ignorance should be overcome through understanding of dependent origination. And therefore, beings or people must be led through into the teaching of the Buddha on based on dependent origination, teaching on dependent origination. People should be led into the teaching of the Buddha through this teaching on explanation of dependent origination. And so I didn't have a discrimination as a sentient being, living being, as a person whatsoever, yet there was no also no non-discrimination. Why is that, Subhuti? Because if at that time there had arisen in me, discrimination as a self, at that time there would also have arisen discrimination as of malice. If there had arisen discrimination as sentient beings, discrimination as living being, discrimination as a person, at that time there would also have arisen discrimination of malice. It's on page 14. Subhuti, I know with clairvoyance that in the past, during 500 lifetimes, I was a rishi called preacher of patience. Even then, there did not arise in me the discrimination as of self. There did not arise in me discrimination as a sentient being, discrimination as a living being, discrimination as a person. Subhuti, therefore, a bodhisattva, a mahasattva, completely abandoning all discrimination, should generate the mind of unsurpassed, perfectly complete enlightenment. Perfectly complete enlightenment. One should generate the mind not abiding in form. One should generate the mind not abiding in sight, sound, smell, taste, particularity, or phenomena. One should generate the mind mind, not abiding in non-phenomena either. The one should generate the mind, not abiding in anything whatever. Why is that? Because that itself, which is abiding, does not abide. Therefore, the Tathagata taught the Bodhisattva should give not abiding. Further, Subhuti, the Bodhisattva should thus totally give away gifts for the welfare of all sentient beings. However, that itself, which is discrimination as a sentient being, is not non-discrimination. Then those themselves who were taught by the Tathagata saying all sentient beings also do not exist. Why is that, Subhuti? Because the Tathagata teaches reality, teaches truth, teaches what is. The Tathagata teaches that what is without error. Further, Subhuti, the Dharma that is manifest and completely realized or shown by the Tathagata has neither truth nor falsity. Subhuti, it is like this. For example, if a man with eyes has entered darkness, he does not see anything whatever. Likewise, should one view the Bodhisattva who totally gives up gift by falling into anything? So, Subhuti, it is like this. For example, upon dawn and sunrise, a man with eyes sees various kinds of forms. Likewise, should one view the Bodhisattva who totally gives up a gift by not falling into anything. Further, Subhuti, those sons of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who take up this Dharma discourse, memorize, read, understand correctly, and thoroughly teach it to others in detail are known by the Tathagata. They are seen by the Tathagata. All those sentient beings will produce an unfathomable heap of merit. Further, Subhuti, compared to some men or women at the time of dawn, totally giving up bodies, numbering grains of sand of the river Ganges, also totally giving up bodies, numbering the grains of sand of the river Ganges at the time of midday or evening, in such number, totally giving up bodies for many hundreds of thousands of tens of millions, 100 million eons, if someone having heard this Dharma discourse would not reject it, if they themselves would produce much greater merit on this basis, incalculable, unfathomable, would need to mention someone who, having written it in letters, takes it up, memorizes, reads, understands correctly, and thoroughly teaches it to others in detail. Further, Subhuti, this Dharma discourse, unimaginable and incomparable. The Dharma discourse was taught by the Tathagata for the benefit of sentient beings who have correctly entered into the supreme vehicle, the welfare of sentient beings who have correctly entered into the best vehicle. Those who take up this Dharma discourse, memorize, read, understand correctly, and thoroughly teach it to others in detail are known by Tathagata. They are seen by the Tathagata. Those sentient beings will be endowed with an unfathomable heap of merit. Being endowed with an unimaginable heap of merit, incomparable, immeasurable, and limitless, all those sentient beings will he's only just referring to the lines in some lines in Abhisamaya Alamkara. And on page number 17. So, Subhuti, whatever son of lineage or daughter of lineage takes up the words of sutra like this, memorizes, reads, and understands, they will be tormented, will be intensely tormented. Why is that, Subhuti? Because whatever non-virtuous actions of former lifetimes that were committed by those sentient beings that would bring rebirth in the lower realms, due to the torment in this very life, those non-virtuous actions of former lifetimes will be purified, and they will also attain the enlightenment of a Buddha. Subhuti, I know with clairvoyance that in the past, countless eons, much beyond the Tathagata Arhat, perfectly completed beyond Buddha Dipankara, there were 8,400,000 of 10,100,000,000 Buddhas whom I pleased and having pleased did not upset. Subhuti, from whatever I did, having pleased and not having upset those Buddha Bhagavans, and in the future period at the end of 500. I'm your face from someone taking up this sutra, memorizing, reading, understanding. So, but compared to this heap of merit, the former heap of merit does not approach even a hundredth part, a thousandth part, a hundred thousand part. Part does not without does not withstand enumeration, measure, calculation, similarity, equivalence, and comparison. So, but at that time, the sons of the lineage or daughter of the lineage will receive quantity of heap of merit that if I were to express the heap of merit of those sons of the lineage or daughters of lineage, sentient beings would go mad, would be disturbed. Further, Subhuti, this Dharma discourse being unimaginable, its maturation indeed should also be known as unimaginable. Then the Venerable Chair Subhuti replied to the Bhagwan, Bhagwan, how should one who has correctly entered the Bodhisattva's vehicle bite, how practice, how to control the mind? The Bhagwan said, Subhuti, here, one who has correctly entered the Bodhisattva vehicle should generate the mind of thinking this. I shall cause all sentient beings to pass completely beyond sorrow into the realm of Nirvana without remainder of their aggregates. How although sentient beings were caused to pass completely beyond sorrow like that, no sentient being whatsoever was caused to pass beyond. Why is that? So, because if a Bodhisattva engages in discriminating a sentient being, or discerning a sentient being, he is not to be called a Bodhisattva. Also, if he engages in discriminating a person, he is not to be called a Bodhisattva. Why is that? Subhuti, because the Dharma called one who has correctly entered the Bodhisattva vehicle does not exist whatever. Subhuti, what do you think about this? Does that Dharma that was manifested and completely realized by the Tathagata from the Tathagata Dipankara unsurpassed, perfect and complete enlightenment exist whatever? He said, and the Venerable Subhuti replied to the Bhagwan, Bhagwan, the Dharma that was manifest and completely realized by the Tathagata from the Tathagata Dipankara, unsurpassed, perfect, and complete enlightenment does not exist whatever. He said that, and the Bhagavan replied to the Venerable Subhuti, Subhuti, it is so, that Dharma that was manifested and completely realized by the Tathagata from the Tathagata Dipankara, unsurpassed, perfect and complete enlightenment does not exist whatever. Subhuti, if that Dharma that was manifested and completely realized by the Tathagata, were to exist at all, that the Tathagata Dipankara would not have made a prediction to me saying, young Brahmin, in the future you will become the Tathagata Arahat, perfectly completed Buddha, called Shakyamuni. Subhuti, thus, since that Dharma that was manifested and completely realized by the Tathagata, unsurpassed, perfect and complete enlightenment, does not exist whatsoever. Therefore, the Tathagata Dipankara made the prediction to me saying, young Brahmin, in the future period, you will become the Tathagata Arahat, perfectly completed Buddha called Shakyamuni. Why is that? Because Subhuti Tathagata is an epithet of the suchness of reality. And so these passages all shows that things are dependently arisen in reality, and because of that, things have no intrinsic existence whatever. So this is what is being taught. So, Subhuti, if someone were to say that the Tathagata Arahat perfectly completed Buddha, manifested and completely realized unsurpassed, perfect, complete enlightenment, they would speak wrongly. Why is that, Subhuti? Because that Dharma that was manifested and completely realized by the Tathagata, unsurpassed, perfect, and complete enlightenment does not exist whatsoever. Subhuti, that Dharma that was manifested and completely realized by the Tathagata has neither truth nor falsity. Therefore, all dharmas are Buddha dharmas, was taught by the Tathagata. Subhuti, all dharmas, although are known dharmas. Therefore, it is said that all dharmas are Buddha dharmas. So, Subhuti, it is like this. For example, like a human endowed with a body, and the body became large. The Venerable Subhuti replied to Bhagwan that taught by the Tathagata, a human endowed with a body and a large body is taught by the Tathagata as not being a body. Therefore, endowed with a body and large body is said that Bhagwan said, Subhuti, it is so. So, if some Bodhisattva were to say, I shall cause sentient beings to completely pass beyond the sorrow, he should not be called Bodhisattva. Why is that? And then he's all on to the mention of the five eyes and the six clairvoyances and so forth. Mm. So he should not be called Bodhisattva. Why is that? Somebody does the Dharma that it is called Bodhisattva exists. Whatever somebody replied, Bhagwan, it is not. The Bhagwan says, somebody, therefore, it was taught by the Tathagata that all Dharmas are without a sentient being, without a living being, without a person. Somebody, if some Bodhisattva were to say, I shall actualize arranged fields, he should too be expressed similarly. Why is that? Somebody, because he arranged fields called arranged fields are... The arranged fields called arranged fields are those taught by the Tathagata as non-arranged. Therefore, they aren't called arranged fields. Subhuti, whatever Bodhisattva appreciates that the Dharma are selfless, saying Dharmas are selfless, he is expressed by the Tathagata Arhat perfectly, a completed Buddha as a Bodhisattva called a Bodhisattva. So nothing whatever can be found as being this or that as the designated object when you try to search for the identity or the nature of that object within it. So, Subhuti, what do you think about this? Does the Tathagata possess the flesh eye? So here, His Holiness was commenting. Subhuti replied, Bhagwan, it is so. The Tathagata possesses a flesh eye. Bhagwan said, Subhuti, what do you think about this? Does the Tathagata possess a divine eye? Subhuti replied, Bhagwan, it is so. The Tathagata possesses the divine eye. Bhagwan said, Subhuti, what do you think about this? Does the Tathagata possess a wisdom eye? Subhuti replied, Bhagwan, it is so. The Tathagata possesses the wisdom eye. The Bhagwan said, Subhuti, what do you think about this? Does the Tathagata possess Dharma eye? Subhuti replied, Bhagwan, it is so. The Tathagata possesses Dharma eye. The Bhagwan said, Subhuti, what do you think about this? Does the Tathagata possess Buddha eye? Subhuti replied, Bhagwan, it is so. The Tathagata possesses the Buddha eye. Bhagwan said, the Buddha, Subhuti, what do you think about this? If there being also just as many Ganges of river as there are grains of sand of the river Ganges, there were just as many world systems as there are grains of sand of those, would those world systems be many? Subhuti replied, Bhagwan, it is so. Those world systems would be many. The Bhagwan said, Subhuti, as many sentient beings as exist in those world systems, I totally know the continuum of consciousness of sentient different thoughts. Why is that, Subhuti? Because a so-called continuum of consciousness is that taught by the Tathagata as a non-continuum. Therefore, it is called continuum of consciousness. Why is that, Subhuti? Because past consciousness does not exist as an observable, nor does future consciousness exist as an observable, nor does present consciousness exist as an observable. Subhuti, what do you think about this? If someone completely filling this belief world system with the seven types of precious things were to give gifts, do you think that the son of lineage or daughter of lineage would produce an enormous heap of merit on that basis? Subhuti replied, Bhagwan, enormous. Sugata, enormous. The Bhagwan says, Subhuti, it is so, it is so. The son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage would produce an enormous heap of merit on that basis, Subhuti. If a heap of merit were a heap of merit, the Tathagata would not have taught a heap of merit called heap of merit. Subhuti, what do you think about this? Should one be viewed as the Tathagata due to total achievement of form body? Subhuti replied, Bhagwan, it is so, not so. One should not be viewed as a Tathagata due to total achievement of the form body. Why is that, Bhagwan? Because total achievement of the form body is taught by the Tathagata as not being total achievement. Therefore, it is called total achievement of the form body. The Bhagwan said, Subhuti, what do you think about this? Is one to be viewed as a Tathagata due to perfect marks? Subhuti replied, Bhagwan, it is not so. One is not to be viewed as a Tathagata due to perfect marks. Why is that? Because that which was taught by the Tathagata's perfect mark was taught by the Tathagata as not being perfect marks. Therefore, they are called perfect marks. The Bhagwan said, Subhuti, what do you think about this? If it is thought that the Tathagata considers that Dharma is demonstrated by me, Subhuti, do not view it like that. Because the Dharma that is demonstrated by the Tathagata does not exist, whatever. Subhuti, if someone were to say Dharma is demonstrated by the Tathagata, Subhuti, he would deprecate me since non-existent and wrongly seized. Why is that, Subhuti? Because that demonstrated Dharma called demonstrated Dharma, which is referred to saying demonstrated Dharma does not exist, whatever. Then the Venerable Subhuti said to the Bhagwan, Bhagwan, if in the future period, will there be any sentient being who, having heard this demonstration of such a Dharma as this, will clearly believe? The Bhagwan said, Subhuti, they are not sentient beings, nor non-sentient beings. Why is that, Subhuti? So-called sentient beings, because they were taught by the Tathagata as non-sentient beings, therefore are called, they are called sentient beings. Subhuti, what do you think about this? Does that dharma that was manifested and completely realized at the Tathagata unsurpassed, perfect, and completely enlightenment, complete enlightenment? So as the Savatantrika Madhyamakas say that, so things do exist objectively, and therefore that existence is not what we put to the test of reasoning. And so, whereas if you check into the nature of things, their identity and so forth, nothing whatever could be found as having any objective existence. Subhadeva, what do you think if thoughts to... If it is thought that the Tathagata considers sentient beings are liberated by me, Subhadi, do you view it like that? Why is that, Subhadi? Because those sentient beings who are liberated by the Tathagata do not exist whatever. Subhadi, if some sentient beings were to be liberated by the Tathagata, that itself would be of the Tathagata, grasping a self, grasping a sentient being, grasping a living being, grasping a person. Subhadi, so-called grasping a self, that is taught by the Tathagata as not... Whoever sees me as form, on page 24, whoever knows me as sound, has wrongly engaged in by abandoning. Those beings do not see me. The Buddha's Dharmata viewed. The guides are the Dharmakaya. Since Dharmata is not to be known, it is unable to be known. So these two verses on page 24 at the end. And then, Subhadi, what do you think about this? If one grasps that the Tathagata Arhat, perfect and complete Buddha, is due to the perfect mark, Subhadi, you should not view so for, Subhadi, the Tathagata Arhat, perfectly completed Buddha, does not manifest and completely realize and surpass perfect and complete enlightenment due to perfect marks, Subhadi. If one grasps that some dharma has been designated as destroyed or annihilated, there's nothing to be, there's no phenomena to be destroyed as such. And therefore, you cannot have an emptiness, which is that absence of the true existence. And therefore, things have to be called and asserted only by way of mere nominality and designation. So by those who have correctly entered the Bodhisattva vehicle, Subhadi, it should not be viewed so. Those who have correctly entered the Bodhisattva vehicle have not designated any dharma whatsoever as destroyed or annihilated. But further, Subhadi, compared to any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who are completely filling with the seven kinds of precious. So Bhagwan says, Subhadi, acquire, not wrongly grasped, so this shows the elimination of the two extremes. And so saying that the things should not be grasped at having some objective existence. Therefore, it is not. It is called acquire. Subhadi. If someone says that the Tathagata goes or comes or stands or sits or lies down, he does not understand the meaning explained by me. Why is that, Subhadi? Because the Tathagata does not go anywhere nor has come from anywhere. Therefore, one says that the Tathagata Arhat, perfectly completed Buddha. Further, Subhadi, if some son of lineage or daughter of lineage were to render as many atoms of earth as exist in a billionfold world system like this, for example, into a powder like a collection of subtlest atoms. Subhadi, what do you think about this? Would that collection of subtlest atoms be many? Subhadi replied, Bhagwan, it is so. That collection of subtlest atoms would be many. Why is that, Bhagwan? Because if there were a collection, the Bhagwan would not have said collection of subtlest atoms. Why is that? Because that collection of subtlest atoms that was taught by the Bhagwan was taught by the Tathagata as no collection. Therefore, one says collection of subtlest atoms, that billionfold world system that was taught by the Tathagata was taught by the Tathagata as no system. Therefore, one says billionfold world system. Why is that? Because Bhagwan, because if there were to be a world system, that itself would be grasping a solid thing. That taught by the Tathagata as grasping a solid thing was taught by the Tathagata as no grasping. Therefore, one says grasping a solid thing. The Bhagwan said, Subhuti, grasping a solid thing is itself a convention. That Dharma does not exist as express it, yet it is grasped by ordinary childish beings. Subhuti, if someone were to say viewing as self was taught by the Tathagata, and viewing as sentient being, viewing as living being, viewing as a person was taught by the Tathagata, Subhuti, would that be spoken by right speech? Somebody replied, Bhagwan, it would not. Sugata, it would not. Why is that, Bhagwan? Because that which was taught by the Tathagata as viewing as self, as taught by the Tathagata as viewing, no viewing, therefore, one says viewing as a self. The Bhagwan said, those who have correctly entered the Bodhisattva's vehicle should know, should view, should appreciate all dharmas like this. They should appreciate like this, not abiding whatever in any discrimination as a dharma. Why is that? Because discrimination as a dharma, also called discrimination as a dharma, is taught by the Tathagata as non-discrimination. Therefore, one says discrimination as a dharma. Further, Subhuti, compared to any Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, who completely filling unfathomable and incalculable. And so at the end, the text mentions a star, a visual aberration, a lamp, an illusion, and so forth. This verse is very, a vast. And so it actually teaches both the space-like wisdom, the space-like emptiness, and also the illusory nature of things. And so space-like emptiness, which is that of the realization of emptiness in the meditative absorption, total meditative absorption, and then seeing things like an illusion at the post-meditation session. And so, things such as compounded phenomena are merely designated. And therefore, from that point of view, Khyotrapa Norsan Gyatso says that anything that exists is compounded because of being designated by the mind. And so here the fourfold disciples or the Sangha are also recognized, bhikshus, bhikshunis, upasakas, upasakis. And the world with devas, humans, asuras, and gandharvas overjoyed, highly praised that taught by the Bhagwan, the exalted Mahayana Sutra of the wisdom gone beyond cold, the Vajrakata is concluded. Sangha is also recognized here as bhikshus, bhikshunis, upasakas, upasikas, upasakis, sikas. So with regard to the perfection of wisdom teachings, what it explicitly teaches is that of emptiness, on which Master Nagarjuna, being the prophesied as the person who would explicate this teaching, he does that through his writings of Mula Madhyamaka Karika and so forth, the six collections of six texts on reasoning. And then the extensive path aspect of the Prajnaparamita is explicated by Master Arya Asanga. And Isolnis is asking if the Chinese have read Wen Tsik's commentary on Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra. So do you consider Maitri as a human person or a deity living in this Tushita heaven? His Holiness is asking the Chinese. Just say, I don't know. Say to me, you don't know. So as I explained yesterday, in your monasteries, if you could part by part read the Mula Madhyamaka Karika, it would be good. And also Abhisamaya Alankara. In when you gather in your temple, so that everyone in the monastery, the monks or the nuns, could become familiar with these texts. And then slowly, if you could also, gradually take to use these texts to study the Madhyamaka view and the profound view and the extensive path, it would be very good to do so in your monastic institutions, monasteries and nunneries. So if it's not inconvenient to you when you recite these texts, the people who are connected with your monastery, the lay people, and if they could also join you when you recite these texts, it would be also good for them. So, in other words, regarding Buddhism, it is something everyone, whether you... And so, with this, the teaching on the Vajra Cutter, the Diamond Cutter Sutra, with this sporadic explanation, as the text itself says, there's great merit in holding the text, reading it, and allowing others, making others write it and so forth, has great merit. So it's been over 2,600 years since the Buddha appeared, and also Masters Nagarjuna and so forth have written their commentaries on these texts, and which we have access to study. And so, as the text itself says, there is great merit and benefit in doing these regarding the teaching. So, as a concluding auspicious practice, there are different physical aspects of Saraswati, such as white, red, and so forth, Saraswatis. So this one blessing of Saraswati is white Saraswati. So Goddess Saraswati, even non-Buddhist in many temples of the... So for this, make a mandala offering, this ground anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru. The four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine as a Buddha filled, and offer it to you. May all sentient beings enjoy this pure land. Please repeat these request lines. Please, Master, pay heed to me, attention to me. Of the body, speech, and mind of Saraswati, please bestow upon me the subsequent permission, as I have done the preliminary ritual. I have visualized myself into the form of Saraswati with one face, and this form of Saraswati. So may you meet all prayer to this Saraswati, holding the lute. So there is a practice of taking refuge, which is common refuge, which means taking refuge, which is shared both in the sutra and by sutra and tantrayana. And so this particular blessing comes within the Kriya Tantra set, and therefore you should have stuck to a vegetarian meal without eggs and meat. And if you have taken eggs or meat, you should throw them up now. So we'll have this verse of refuge. So with the wish to free all sentient beings, I shall always go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until I reach the heart of enlightenment, which shows the practice of taking refuge. And then, enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate the mind for full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. This shows that of the practice of generating bodhicitta. And so within this line, it says, enthused by wisdom and compassion. So with wisdom, the bodhisattvas focus their mind on enlightenment, Buddhahood, and with compassion, they focus on the suffering of sentient beings. Therefore, it combines both the wisdom and the method part of the practice. And so we'll use this. Please repeat these verses. With a wish to free all sentient beings, I shall go always for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until I reach the full enlightenment. Enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate mind for full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. So say again, with a wish to free all sentient beings, I shall always go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate mind for full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. With a wish to free all sentient beings, I shall always go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate mind for full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. So with this, you have generated that of taking refuge and the generating bodhicitta. And so, viewing and visualizing the Lama here as in the aspect of Saraswati with one face and four hands. So holding this double-edged sword and so forth. And also imagine the Buddha, Shakyamuni himself, who taught the perfection of wisdom. And also Masters Nagarjuna and so forth. Imagine them all in the space before you. And in front of them, you will generate bodhicitta or holds an upala flower. And so the Buddha, since giving his teaching, it's been 2,600 years, and then his followers, such as Master Nagarjuna and so forth, have benefited generated this mind for enlightenment, for awakening, for the benefit of all sentient beings, and also engaged in the bodhisattva practices to fulfill that goal. And just as they have done this, you should also determine that you will follow in their footsteps and generate this warm heart of bodhicitta for the benefit of all sentient beings. So I take refuge in the three jewels. I confess each wrong actions. I rejoice in the merits of all beings. I take to heart state of Buddhahood. I seek refuge in three jewels. I confess each wrong actions. I rejoice in the merits of all beings. I take to heart state of Buddhahood. I seek refuge to the three jewels. I confess each wrongdoings, and I rejoice in the merits of all beings, and I take to heart state of Buddhahood. So, having repeated this three times, it's not clear in the text itself, but first, as you found in the Vajrakata Sutra, all phenomena, this and that, nothing could actually be pinpointed as being this or that, just as they appear to us as having some kind of independent existence. Whereas, while they do not exist any intrinsically at all, they do exist because they affect us, they impact us, and therefore they exist by way of mere nominality and designation. So when you look at yourself, think about yourself, nothing whatever can be found within yourself as being you as such. And similarly, it is the case with Saraswati, the goddess Saraswati, the Arya Saraswati. So when you do this critical scrutiny and do not find this oneself, Saraswati, and so forth, what this shows is that things have no essential independent existence, and therefore meditate on this nature or reality of yourself and the goddess Saraswati and all phenomena of phenomena. Meditate on emptiness, and so there is this just spaciousness, the empty vacuity there, all because you are not thinking of the appearances as such, but your mind is focused on that absence of any essential intrinsic existence, and therefore within that perception the conventional things just disappear from your sight. And so from within that state of emptiness, now you imagine arising into white Saraswati, three face, the all white. So the first two right and left hands respectively holds a double-edged sword and Upala flower, and then the next two holds that of the Veena, Piwanda, Veena. So three faces, all white, with four hands. The right, first right holding a double-edged sword, and then at your heart is a shrim syllable. Both the master and the disciples. And so the shrim at the guru's heart, from there, the rays of light go out, radiate, and rays of light also invoked the vowels, Sanskrit vowels, and so forth, and the mantra of Saraswati, and these dissolve into the disciples. But no, I haven't. So 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 the mantra, wheel of the mantra comes, shoots forth from the guru's heart with the rays of light that emit from the shrim syllable and dissolve into the heart of the disciples. As I said before, you have visualized yourself as Saraswati. And similarly, Saraswati has been generated in the altar in front of you. And through your fervent supplication to the Guru, the Buddha, the Guru and the deity in the altar and all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are invoked, and their blessings of body comes forth and dissolves into you. Thereby you receive the blessing of the body of Saraswati. Body of Saraswati dissolves into you. Imagine this. So the deity becomes one with it, you, the disciples. So with this, the blessing of the body is done. And then at your heart, as yourself as Saraswati, at your heart is a shrim. And also the front-generated deity at the heart is the eight-petaled lotus. On each lotus is the 16 vowels. So by making fervent supplication to the Guru, the rays of light emit from the Guru's heart and invokes the deity in front in the altar, and this invokes the blessings of Saraswati. And at your heart, please repeat this. This mantra is placed at your heart on the eight petals of lotus at your heart. Repeat this. Please repeat this. A-A-I-I. U-U-Riri. Lili-E-E. O-O. Ang-A. O-O. Vedza-Devi. Bitsu-Bitsu. Panjavada. Shimhum, Oma Aa, Ee, Uu, Riri, Lili, Ee, Oo, Ang A, Ombaza Divi, Itzu Pitu, Benjawata, Shimhum, Oma Aa, Ee, Uu, Riri, Lili, Ee, Oo, Ang A, Ombaza Divi. Itu pitu pranjavataya shim hum. So you repeated this mantra three times. And so with this, imagine that you have received the blessing of the Saraswati's speech. And then again, from the heart of the Guru, light rays are emitted, and this invokes the heart of the deity in the front. And then this invokes, in turn, the blessings of Saraswati, which comes in the form of this hand implement, such as the double-edged sword, the upala flower, the veena, and so forth. And thereby you receive the blessing of the mind of Saraswati. So this is the Saraswati that you see on the screen now. Right, the first right hand holding double-edged sword, and then the first left hand holding upala flower, and then the two remaining right and left hands holding the veena. So with this, you have received the white Saraswati blessing, which comes from the Rinchung, the hundreds of the initiations in the Rinchung Gyatso. For this, I received the collection of these initiations from Tata Rinpoche. And the male deity for wisdom is that of the Manjushri, and then the female is Saraswati. So if you could do practice based on these two, the father and the mother, wisdom deities, then it helps to increase your intellect and wisdom. China has a special connection with Manjushri. Wu Taishan, the five-peaked mountain, is considered as a special sacred site of Manjushri. And so, Manjushri, and his consort, if you could do practice on these two deities, it would have a special benefit, for you as well. So yesterday and today, mainly for the Chinese disciples from China, men in China, Taiwan, and other places, for them, with them in mind, I have given these two teachings. The discourse is now finished. So of being a follower of the Buddha, you should have be able to develop wisdom, being able to differentiate and distinguish between what is right and wrong, ultimately, and also be a compassionate and kind person as a follower of the Buddha. So in the future, in Wu Taishan, I will also pray that I could give blessings of Manjushri in Wu Taishan, the five-peaked mountain, and you should also make your prayers for that to happen. So this completes the series of teachings in this time. So people who have gathered here out of faith, all monastics and lay people, for days on you have received many teachings, and the foundation of this is mainly that your faith and your commitment, binding pledge or the spiritual bond with me. And so pay more attention to the view of emptiness, and also together with it that of bodhicitta. So you should be able to say that having come to Bodh Gaya, many of you must have caught cold. Me too, I caught cold. And so having suffered cold, you should make it worth having come here so that you are able to develop the wisdom of emptiness and also good heart, so that you make your suffering of cold worth it. Otherwise, you will be in a losing end without being able to inculcate these principles in your mind, in your being.
Tante Sigisina.
So for these many days on this first place where the Buddha became enlightened, we have created offering to please the victorious ones regarding the teaching of the emptiness, on emptiness, as we found in the Vajracchedaka Sutra. And so we have created lots of merit from that. Therefore, we dedicate all this with the prayer. Just as Manjushri has over ki jenchogi machapam chapjan nyambar kyobe choteni ninji chembe yirap kyobai pendeter de sewar cheba sho chushen me to tam re rabling shin ni de kemba de sanje shin do mikte
Sure.